When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Odyssey is a perfectly fine game. The combat is okay. Running and jumping and climbing and assassinating is all pretty fun. The bird's kind of cool. It's all pretty. It's all fine. It's the sort of thing I'd enjoy for a few hours and forget about, except for one glorious detail. Playing as Cassandra the Badass Mercenary has me feeling like I'm playing through an entire season of Xena Warrior Princess. And for those of you not familiar with Warrior Princess, first, I'm sorry for you, because it was amazing. It's a supremely campy and super queer 90s TV show starring Lucy Lawless as a very hot, butch badass warrior woman, forget what she was the princess of, and of course she had some divine blood, who traveled mythical ancient Greece with her bard, totally her girlfriend Gabrielle, fighting bad guys, solving people's problems, and generally having a great time. Those were actually my words from a piece that just went up on the site that talks about Assassin's Creed Odyssey and how I'm still playing it because it makes me feel like Xena. I'm Danielle Riendo, and this is Waypoint Radio, episode 194. Joining me today are Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
And Rob Zachney.
Hello, hello.
And today we're going to talk about games that have characters that really, like, just truly kept us in it, whether the game itself was any good or not. So, of course, my framing and my inspiration today is Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is fine, I guess. I didn't even play Origins. I haven't even really played an Assassin's Creed since 2. I mean, I've played a little bit of bits and pieces of other Assassin's Creeds, but yeah, they're fine. They're totally fine. But in this, it's really just Cassandra. Like, I keep doing all the stupid chores, like the, you know, not very interesting quests, just to see how she's going to react to something, just to see how she'll talk to, like, the townsfolk or whoever it is in question. And I haven't even gotten to the romance stuff yet. I'm still pretty early in, but I think I'm going to kind of stick with it because of her. My biggest framing question is, have either of you ever encountered this where there's a game that it's fine, probably, or it's even bad, but you just need to keep playing for a particular character?
I mean, like, initially that was Origins for me.
Okay.
Now, I think in the end, Assassin's Creed Origins had enough good moments and, like, cool settings to make it worth, like, hanging out in that world, but particularly early on, it was Bayek and that performance. Like, that was the character that I was into far more than the game. I think this probably isn't that uncommon, because in some ways making a really good game pretty hard.
Yeah.
But, like, if you have a good writer or creative, like, or creative leadership on a game, not quite as hard to get at least, like, one character that is going to be the life of the party, I suspect.
Definitely. Patrick, how about you?
I've been sorting through, so I keep a list of every game that I meaningfully play for, like, the last 5
Jay Cutler,
years?
Madden 16. <That's
Patrick's. laughs> And I've been trying to find an example of a game that would sort of fit that mold where, like, the characters drew. Most of the time, the games I'm playing, like, the characters in the worlds intersected in a way that I was playing because they were a complement for one another, as opposed to something where, you know, the example you're talking about, like, I'm looking through the last 3 years, I'm looking.
Well, okay,
through.
Hold on.
Huh? Go ahead.
What about, like, Telltale Batman? I think those games were actually, like, kind of bad, but, like, the takes.
Yeah,
on
but
the
I mean, that's like, I mean, I guess the Telltale stuff is sort of writ large. Like, if you wanted adventure-y stuff, like, it's not really, it's just a choose, it's just kind of a generic choose your own adventure with like really good writing and characters at this point. But I made peace with that like a long time ago. Like, you saw that happen over the course of the first season of The Walking Dead, where it started with actually some puzzles, which even then were a stretch. And then even over the course of that season, they ironed them out of there and sort of found where they were taking their version of the genre. And so at a certain point, I just sort of accepted, oh, this is what this is, as opposed to like going at that point, I knew I was going into it solely because of the characters and the stories and was really not there for like the gamey or mechanical part. Looking through, I'm now back in 2015 as I'm looking through some other ones. But so, yeah, maybe like Dragon Age Inquisition. I did not enjoy. That's a game I did not enjoy playing. Nothing about the combat in that game grabbed me whatsoever. I actively disliked playing that game. But, and it was the first Dragon Age I'd played, and I found the world kind of interesting, despite my sort of like reticence to sort of fantasy genres. It's usually something I'm not normally drawn to. But I heard so many good things about Dragon Age over the years, and Inquisition seemed like a good jumping in point. And so that was one where I liked the characters, the world, and the story, but I was basically listening to podcasts for the vast majority of the combat stuff, because I was just trying to get through those sequences to the next one. So I think that's the last one where like I actively sort of detested the act of playing the game and was just trying to get to some more of the story and character bits.
That reminds me of another case where in the end I feel very good about this game, but Mass Effect 1. First time I played it, in the end, I feel that game pays off tremendously and is probably still my favorite of the Mass Effect series, because of the various payoffs that happen in that like extended last act. But to get to that point, it was kind of Rex pulling me through a lot of that. Like,
sure.
There were like, I didn't find Shepard a particularly interesting character in those early stages, because like Shepard is such a cipher. In the early part of Mass Effect, like, literally, it's, hey, you seem like a promising young death commando. Go be a death commando. And Shepard's like, hell yeah, I love it. And there just isn't much to that. And the two, like, main characters alongside Shepard, Caden and,
Ashley. Ashley died time, early in mine, so, you know.
Ashley got a poor Ashley got a raw deal.
Sorry,
like, can
Ashley.
You imagine like the dwindling, like there had to be conversations like late in Mass Effect like 3 development where it's like, can we just canonically find a way to kill Ashley? Like, how many, what percentage of players still have Ashley alive? It's
she
like
was
a dwindling.
Racist. Like, it was just, it was a little, you know.
You know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you slip and fall on a banana peel and.
Yeah,
I missed that quick time sequence. Sorry.
Oh, I let her sacrifice herself.
I think that's
I figured
what I
this
did.
Is the way to let yeah. your since the this is the whole
split the difference. Know that she's going to die, but do it in a noble fashion.
Yeah, yeah. I think I treated Ashley very fairly, but so there weren't a lot of characters in that were sort of holding my interest, but there was something so compelling about Rex, just the like. I couldn't get enough of, like, Shepard. Every time he went by him. But also, he was so sardonic.
He can die
like,
early in Mass Effect 1, right?
He can die very late.
Very late, okay.
That was
the one time, I have, like, a pretty hard and fast rule of, like, living with the consequences of your actions, and even if you deeply regret them. But I actually went back and I was like, no way am I live. I am not, the canonical version of my story is not one where Rex dies. Thank you.
See, I'm the Captain Kirk of the Mass Effect series. Like, I threaded every single needle and, like, got everyone through who needed it. Like, you know, Ashley, you're good. Like, there's no saving Ashley. Somebody's going to be left behind there. But I managed to talk Rex down. I managed to do the ending mission of 2 with no losses whatsoever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it was really Rex. And kind of there was just enough detail about his backstory and sort of the contrast between, like, Rex playing up this like ultra violent hulking brute, like Rex is just there to like kick ass and take names, just like a gun for hire. And then also, oh, Rex is actually also kind of a burgeoning political leader and an exiled one at that, right? And has like really starts unpacking what has happened to like the Krogans and the effect it has had on their entire like civilization and culture. And so like Rex was working on these two levels, which was like he had a story that was like the most interesting thing I knew about the Mass Effect universe at the time. Like it was the most interesting detail of like what the backstory of that universe is. And then also I just love me some Rex. I wanted to thwack, you know, forehead crests with him all day long.
I found two other games in my 2015 list that I think fit this category. One, Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, a game that we've mentioned before. I found the plot engrossing and interesting, and like the conclusion of the story that's being told to be really interesting, but one in which I grew to loathe the moment to moment gameplay. It was like the getting to the different stories, you know, when you would follow the, you know, energy in the air or whatever it was, like when that would lead to a character moment you could watch, that was great. It was just like the way you had to crawl your way there as though you didn't know how to walk in a world where there's no one here, and just for the love of fucking God, just start running like a normal person. You don't need a stamina meter in this adventure game. So that was one where I sort of like was not having a great time playing it, but like the actual story it was telling, the characters I was coming to know were enough that it kind of dragged me across the finish line. And I think a great example of this, one of my favorite games of all time, Soma, is a game that, you know, the designers have since said, maybe this was the wrong story to be telling in a game in which you're going to have folks that want to experience the story but don't necessarily want to hide from, you know, monsters around the corner. And they have since put out gameplay options that allow you to not turn off the encounters, but they essentially make them meaningless so that you can kind of just run through them and get to the next story beat. Because it continues to... I think people should be talking about Soma as like an all-time great video game story. It is... The final moments of that game are some of the darkest and bleakest I have ever felt in any story, like video games or otherwise. It was the kind of thing where I was late at night, I'd had a couple of drinks, the end happens, and I just stared at the ceiling for like a couple of minutes. It was just so impactful. But the gameplay part of it I thought was like pretty weak. Even as someone that likes, you know, really enjoyed Amnesia, generally likes Frictional's approach, I do think maybe it was the wrong call for that game in particular, or at least it exposed something that Frictional started with the Amnesia games, felt archaic or outdated by the time Soma arrived, in which Amnesia influenced so many things. And by the time that the successor arrived, it actually hadn't learned enough from Amnesia to feel as though it wasn't a little bit antiquated. And so that's a game where I really do think if people went back, gave it a shot, played it on easy mode or whatever, like, don't let any of that stop you. Like, if you're into dark science fiction, you know, the Soma is an all-time great regardless of medium. And that was one where I was sort of okay with the gameplay, but in, like, looking back on it, it was absolutely one in which I was just begrudgingly accepting the gameplay so I could see where the characters and the story went. And now as I talk about it, I would like to play Soma again desperately.
Yeah.
Because it was truly a special experience.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I was sort of dancing around sort of including this on my own personal list because I love that game. As you do, Patrick, think it's like a top 10 like contender,
yeah,
for sure.
Yes.
For like all.
Yes. Oh, games. Yeah, 100%.
Really, really incredible. And on that note, another game I genuinely love, and it was like my game of the year before in 2014, but I am very, I'm okay with noting it went on way too long. Alien Isolation is definitely sort of, it fits the bill, not in the same sense of Assassin's Creed, because for me in Odyssey, I love this character and I'm, you know, on the gameplay. Like it's a little bit more of an extreme dynamic, but in in Isolation's case, I really enjoyed the game and I enjoyed the gameplay. I also wasn't reviewing the game. I didn't have time pressure to sort of play the game. So I played it very much at my own pace. I streamed a lot of it. So I was sort of able to enjoy it a little bit more than I think a lot of folks who kind of had to like rush through that game. And that is like a 30-hour game. Like if you are in any way meticulous with it, it is like a 25 to 30-hour game that, you know, could have very easily been like a 10 to 12 hour game and been,
yeah,
like, been just as good.
As someone that reviewed it, 100% yep. agree.
Yeah, so in that case, I also like really liked the character of Amanda Ripley. It was very much the characterization I thought was actually really brilliant because it was so through the gameplay. Like, she's an engineer, she's no nonsense, she's in a crisis, and a lot of like her characteristics are completely mechanized. It's all, okay, she knows how to use this machinery. Okay, she knows she needs to keep a cool head and you know, make the noises on the buttons that might attract the alien, but she still kind of has to do it. I thought that was really brilliant. Not a ton of cutscenes, you know, a little bit here and there, certainly. But I, like, needed to know if she made it out of this situation. It was one of those where, like, even especially the last couple of hours, I would say, where things get so frustrating and it becomes, like, trial and error just to get through that sort of last section.
Oh, the alien didn't die that time? Okay.
Yep. And the face huggers, like, it's just like, oh my, dude, you made
this brilliant
game.
That was a, case where the game, like, I'm with you. Like, I thought, like, she was a really interesting character, and the idea that rather than traditional ways of expressing characterization and personality through elaborate cutscenes, character interactions, you know, diaries, audio logs, that like you learn, you could fill in a lot of the gaps sort of on your own, like partially based on what you know about like her family history, partially about how she demonstrates through mechanical actions and the ones that the player engages with. But because the game dragged on to such a degree, it ended up eroding my interest in like the plot and the characters because like that, like, it just started splitting in a certain direction where I was becoming so frustrated with the game's inability to just like wrap it up. You know, like we need like a Rob Zachney out there, like telling us to like, air horn, we're coming to an end. Your monologue.
I still don't
Alien
think I
Isolation.
Managed to do a podcast in less than 90 minutes, by the way. So I'm not doing such a great job.
Yeah, Rob, we all have our faults.
My 48
we work
minutes
for Austin Walker. Hour. So I'm not, you know, I mean, come on.
Alien Isolation's interesting. This isn't even on topic. It's just about Alien Isolation.
Good.
Go for it.
What's amazing about
Danielle
it
is not going to stop you.
I'm not going to stop you.
It channels what's like tremendous about Alien, the movie, which is a 2-hour movie and ends. You know what I mean? It's like, it's echoing this experience. And it's also doing some other things that are also really novel. Like, again, one of the most like horrific moments, like, what a transcendent horror game moment. The first time you encounter the working Joes.
Oh, yeah.
And you walk past one, he's like, can I help you, sir? And, you know, you just sort of brush past him, heading to the elevator. But at the elevator, you turn around and hit the button. And when you turn around and hit the button, you see him at the end of the hall, just staring after you with those, like, glowing fucking eyes. And it is still, I'm like, you would know these things are going to go bad on you. You know that. But, like, it is still one of the most, like, unsettling moments I've ever experienced. And the game's really great at realizing moments like that. But then it has this feeling of, well, but we're a video game, so got to give people their money's worth. 30 hours. Remember that scene where Ripley has gunfights with the other people on the Nostromo? No, well, we have that scene now. But I don't know. It's a series I think about when I think of this question. And it's weird because I think it's intentional, but I think a lot about the Gabriel Knight games. The title character is kind of an asshole. Like, Gabriel Knight sucks. And as the series goes on, he gets worse.
Do you want to set up, like, what? Because, I mean, I think there are a lot of adventure game series that people are, like, familiar with, but Gabriel Knight was, like, it was beloved by a certain class of people. Like, I loved the Gabriel Knight games. They embraced FMV in a way that I was very much into. But do you want to kind of, set up what those games were?
Well, the Gabriel Knight series is interesting because, like, each game is radically different from the one that preceded it. Like, Gabriel Knight is a series completely informed by whatever the state of the art in adventure games was at that particular moment. So the first game is a very traditional, gorgeous pixel art point-and-click adventure game. The second one is a photorealistic, FMV-heavy point-and-click adventure game.
Like the age of, like, Tex Murphy and stuff like that.
And then the third one is, well, 3D models are the way of the future, and so we're going to make a 3D Gabriel Knight adventure game. And that's the one that has the infamous cat hair mustache puzzle.
Oh, God.
That I think that might still be archived over at Old Man Murray, which, you know, you can take or leave Old Man Murray, but the description of what happens to adventure games and why they die off is pretty on point over at Old Man Murray. But the so the series is about Gabriel Knight, who is, I think, an occult bookstore owner in New Orleans.
I believe that is correct.
And he, surprise, he is pulled into a world of the occult, and it's all real, and he's descended from a bloodline of Schattenjägers, shadow hunters, who would, like, kill vampires and monsters in old Germany, but he's, like, the last of the line. And so this kind of douchebag New Orleans horn dog has to become a hero. But the real hero of the series is his... starts out as assistant, but increasingly, like, partner in crime solving, Grace, who, when you meet her, I think is a recently, like, someone who, like, ran screaming from grad school, I believe, is taking a gap year that is turning into a gap life. But it's really interesting because Gabriel increasingly just starts to suck. Like, he's sexist, he's piggish, he's not really, he's not respectful. He doesn't really, like, take note of the ways people are helping him or, like, you know, covering his ass. He's oblivious to all of that. And Grace is the one, particularly in the second game, who is kind of in the background figuring everything out, doing the work, hitting the books. Grace is the square. Gabriel's the hero, is kind of the path there. And Gabriel can be hard to take. But Grace is, like, the second game, half of it's literally about Grace and from her point of view. And increasingly, you're just kind of playing it for her. And the weird thing to me that I've never quite figured out is, did Jane Jensen, who's the creator and writer of this series, did she realize, like, how radically the balance had shifted in that series? Like, was she cognizant of just how toxic Gabriel was becoming and how much of a aspirational, like, insert figure Grace was becoming?
I'm not sure that she was, because I played a game from her in around 2014 called Mobius Empire Rising.
Okay.
And it was, lot of real sexist, and did not seem to be terribly aware of how sexist it was being. It seemed like she wanted to have kind of like a bromance story between two dudes, and, like, ladies did not get treated very well in that game. And the stuff I read from her sort of responding to some of the criticisms did not feel particularly aware.
Did she not take the criticism on board particularly well?
No. Nope,
that's too bad. That's too bad, because I think she made a game in, like, 2009, like Grey Matter, which my partner played and said was very, very cool, though obviously our politics have certainly moved since then, so it's possible there's stuff we didn't really internalize. But it's an interesting case of, like, clearly, like, this stuff was authored to an extent and intentional to an extent, but it ends up being such a weird dichotomy. But no, Patrick's right. You should, Gabriel Knight 2, The Beast Within, great game, one of the best FMV games ever made.
Also one of the all-time great cover to a game. Like, it is etched in my mind that, like, the, it's like a curtain. Or
yeah,
a,
the white sheet.
White sheet with, like, this, like, kind of like a werewolf sort of figure, like, kind of trying to break through. It's, like, it etched into my, because I used to play this game all the time at my at my aunt and uncle's house. Like, it was one of the, their kid was sort of into PC games and then gave them up. And, like, one of the games that he left behind when he went to college was The Beast Within. And so when they would babysit me, they would just sit me down and let me fumble my way through The Beast Within, which, honestly, like adventure games as a genre are one that I largely play for the plot and characters and eventually come to loathe, like, almost everything about the puzzle part. Like, I mean, I have so many fond memories of Tex Murphy and Monkey Island, but, like, none of those memories involve feeling good about, like, solving the puzzles along the way. Like, by and large, puzzle games, like, just don't line up with, like, the parts of my brain that are, like, I'm just not good at that stuff. Like, I think part of that is rooted back, and, like, even in high school, like, got easy A, like, aced my way through algebra, and I got a C minus in geometry. Like, it's just, like, my brain didn't just, like, click with the spatial stuff, and maybe that also lines up with why, like, adventure game puzzles just never quite click for me, and I often finding myself cheating my way through them just so I can, like, experience. Like, Thimbleweed Park is a great example of this. That's a game where did not like anything about the puzzles in that game, like, and then ultimately just had a walkthrough sitting next to me so I could just kind of putz my way through that stuff, but loved the characters and the world, and but just had really did not like anything about the puzzle stuff. And I think that is a through line through a lot of adventure, like Tex Murphy, like those are my all-time favorite adventure games. They are basically interactive X-Files games with like a bumbling protagonist who was like a really shitty like Mulder and Scully, and that's what made them very appealing to me. One of them actually involved, like, you know, in investigating Area 51 and aliens and all that stuff. I think I shared the story before where the Tex Murphy games were like I discovered, or rather my parents discovered, 1-900 numbers, because I would just call 1-900 numbers to get hints from a hint line, and then my parents would get a bill that was like, why is there $40 fucking dollars in, like, you know, 1-900 numbers? And I was like, oh, I was calling to figure out what to do about the dead clown. And I was not allowed to call 1-900 numbers after that.
Good. Very, very, very good. I think that's a great place for us to take a quick break for a 1-900 number, maybe. Who knows what this ad
would
be for.
How to solve the dead clown. You know? That's the ad that's coming up next.
We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Wanted to ask about so all of these are all the games we talked about so far are games I would probably call like at least decent, like at least, you know, like functional. They're not falling apart, you know. Maybe there's some areas that are very frustrating, but I think there's another category here of games that are like fucking like getting through it is in itself an achievement. I'm thinking primarily of Deadly Premonition right here, which I think is kind of an awesome broken game, and there's been a lot of ink spilled on sort of, you know, this game. It's if you're unfamiliar, it's a really wacky, very Twin Peaksy sort of open world game that was meant for one platform and ended up releasing in I think 2011, much later than I think it was sort of originally supposed to release, and just a delight in so many ways in terms of its world building and its central character and all the people in this town that you get to kind of visit. But it is a disaster in terms of gameplay. Like, it is like, everyone is sort of supposed to play it on easy because anything more is just frustrating. Things just don't work the way they usually work in modern games.
The combat is utterly is dog shit. It's so bad. Actually, like fun fact about that game is that it had to be like pseudo rebooted halfway through. It was shown originally, I believe, at a Tokyo Game Show, and then there were concerns that there were going to be trademark infringements on Twin Peaks as an IP, and then they had to like rework large parts of the game and the story and characters to try and make it more Twin Peaks influenced rather than just Twin Peaks the game.
That's very good. Oh, so on brand for that game. My God. Yeah, but I have these really fond memories of playing it with my friends on like a lazy Sunday afternoon and just like kind of laughing at it, but also laughing along with it because it is very tongue-in-cheek, or at least some sections of it are very tongue-in-cheek. It sure feels like a game made with a lot of love, and maybe not the most amount of polish, but a lot of love. And I'm kind of wondering if there are any games like that for you guys that are just like, it's kind of broken. I know Mass Effect 1 might technically kind of qualify, at least in its early bits. The combat was not great in that game, but it more or less functioned. But if there are any, like, it was kind of fucking broken, but there was a character or a tone, even a tone, like, I guess we can kind of widen it out a little bit, like the world itself or a character, like, really just drew you in and you're like, man, this sucks, but I love it.
I mean, sweary stuff in general is sure. like that. I forget the Kinect game that he made that
D4!
Yeah, D4. Dreams.
Dark Dreams Don't Die.
Yeah, what a good name. What a good name.
Good.
And what a great game. Like, it... I mean, what's your definition of a great game, right? it's charming. It is idiosyncratic. It is interesting. It is weird. It is heartfelt. It is personal. Like, it has all the things you want. Like, it is not polished. Yes, it is broken in some like really fundamental ways. But like, it has so much charm, and like, it was just a joy to play. I was so upset when we found out we weren't going to get further episodes. I wasn't all that invested in the story. I was just invested in. I'm just invested in the way that, like, people want, like, I'm interested in Kojima, but, like, I'm way more interested in people giving, like, Sweary way too much money and seeing what he
How's that Steam
it. Like, I guess, huh?
How's that Steam
version? I played it, and it's very good, but it's so obvious it was a Kinect game, just how, like, forgiving the controls are when you play it on Steam.
Oh, because there is, like, a mouse and keyboard and gamepad version of it.
Yeah, or you can even play it with a controller, because it's, you know.
I guess maybe like Yoko Taro is like splitting the difference between like Kojima and Sweary is like but yeah, I think like Sweary, like he has a new game coming out today or tomorrow called The Missing, some sort of platformer adventure game that I watched the trailer. It doesn't look very good, but Sweary made it, and you know what? Cha-ching, I'm on board. Like, I'm willing to make my way through, because my guess is there will be enough there that makes getting through some questionable gameplay choices worth it. Maybe that won't be the case, but it has been true so far with his work that he is someone where my expectations for the gameplay are lowered. I accept that. I'm okay with it because I feel as though I'll be rewarded with the characters and the story that I'll go on. And I think Yoko Taro was also similarly, right? Like, I mean, I think Nier Automata is a better game than the original Nier gameplay-wise, but it is, that combat is a real slog at hour 12 or 13. Like, it stops adding new layers to it, and you're mostly just struggling through to get to the story bits. So I think those two creators specifically are ones in which I sort of am willing to sort of forego my normal gameplay expectations in lieu of, getting a really tremendous story and insight.
Awesome. Rob, do you happen to have one? It's okay if you don't, but.
No, I mean, there are games I find endearing and that are sort of like not quite fully functional and like still it's worth putting up with them. And then there's games that are just like, have a lot of cool, weird character, but are too like polished to have the endearing sort of, oh, you're basically broken, but somehow you still kind of work factor going for it. Like, I find Remedy games to be almost universally like endearingly weird in a lot of ways, but they're not, they're so polished and like comparatively big budget that they're not going to inspire in me the same feeling that like a sweary game inspires in y'all. So I, you know, I think a game like Alan Wake is clearly like really has had a lot of time and resources invested into it. But yet it is still such a weird game and story and idea, inconsistently executed, that I find something really, really compelling about that. The other, on the other side of things, like a game that, games that almost like seem to be struggling to pull off what they've set themselves to do. I think Frozen Synapse 2 is a game that sort of falls into that category. Like, in terms of the tactical combat, it's very, it's pretty straightforward. It works well. It builds on what the first game did. But the campaign is such an ambitious reach for this game that it doesn't fully feel like completely put together right. Doesn't completely feel like the overall campaign structure necessarily works in every way, but it works well enough that you can't help but be surprised a bit at how well they carried off this really ambitious idea.
Yeah, that's, I feel that more and more often these days, and I'm not sure even why I get more and more critical about the sort of seams showing with something. And a lot of that I feel like does have to do with whether or not there is that character or that world or that thing that makes me like, whatever, this is what I really play it for, so it's fine. You know, like, I feel like I'm getting even more and more entrenched in my own tastes, which I'm not sure is the greatest thing in life, for sure. I wonder if that's just sort of a function of age and just being like, yeah, I know what I like, old. Damn it. Yeah. It's called being old. Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're getting there. One of these... One of these, we're all in our 30s
I would say I'm 33. I think you're a little older than me. I think we're in it, Danielle. Relative to other people in video games, especially given how young video games skew, I think we're the old.
We just published a piece that was like, I like this game because it reminds me of Xena. So
You know what? You know what? When you're publishing things that say, "Gee, this charming cheesy '90s show." That most of you are not going to remember.
Yep.
I think you have crossed the Rubicon. The line has been found. And the line is when you are waxing nostalgic publicly about Xena Warrior Princess, which is, I'm not trying to take away from your love of Xena. I'm just saying, it just says something.
That show was from 20 years ago. That sure is true.
She still looks good, man. She had a recurring role in the underrated Evil Dead series on Stars, Evil Dead. You could put her in a new Xena show, and, like, it would work. Like,
Xena and her teen daughter. That would be fine.
Sure, why not? Why not? Netflix is funding everything these days.
Honestly, I'd be there for Lucy. I've been a Lucy Lawless fan my entire life. I know. For reasons that are not just obvious, to be clear. I think she's a really good performer.
She's a good actress, too. She's very funny. She's like a very good, underrated like physical, I mean, obviously comes through. I didn't watch a lot of Xena, but like it would just be on when I would be like flicking through when I was younger, and there'd be what Hercules was also on at the same time, right? Like that was those were on like airing at the same time, and like she's like an underrated, and the Evil Dead series is where like I was reminded of this was like she's a very underrated sort of like physical comedy actress.
Agreed. She's hysterical, and I've always loved slapstick. I've always loved physical comedy, maybe even more than a lot of other forms of comedy. At least when it's done well. And when it's done poorly, it's obviously not great in any way. But
that's why she was really good in the Evil Dead series, because like Evil Dead is like, you know, well, the first Evil Dead 1 was like a straight up horror, but Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness were both slapstick comedy, in a really brilliant ways, and so like she fit into that world very easily.
That's kind of awesome. That's another thing I'll have to watch. I've never really disliked her in anything. I thought she was also pretty good in Battlestar Galactica, you know, a few years after Xena.
She was in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Dang, she's just like around. You just sometimes forget.
Yeah.
Exactly. She just never quite became like a movie star. She was just like a sort of like perennial, like she's been in a bunch of things TV star.
Yeah, like a pretty, I guess more of a character actor maybe later on in her career, but absolutely, she's got that star power. She's got those mm-hmm. eyes, you know, and she's like 6'2 or whatever. I mean, she's, yeah. Anyway, the Lucy Lawless moment brought to you by whoever advertised this podcast today, I guess. One last thing I wanted to sort of mention on this before we go briefly to the question bucket was the idea of, so slightly weird idea, but I like it as a framing. And it has to do with kind of like, if you really love a character in a game, or even if it's just the world of the game, but mostly a character of the game, that idea of, obviously games are much longer than, well, maybe not a TV series, but they tend to be much longer than a movie, right? And you kind of almost create like a friendship or a kinship between yourself and characters that you really like. And likewise, if you really hate characters, you hate them even more. There's some certain thing that I want to call like the road trip test. Like if you really have a close friend, you really want to know if they're going to be true blue. You sit in a car with them for 12 hours a day and you spend like an entire a day with them or multiple days with them. And that's how you know, right? And like I kind of feel that. That also applies to games. Like, you're going to know if that character, if you really like them, if they really are actually a good character for you and sort of what your style is and what you enjoy in a game. You're gonna know after that, the 25 hours of Alien Isolation or whatever it is, which I find that endearing. I give characters the road trip test in games all the time. I feel like you kind of can't help it. All right, so if there's no other thoughts on characters that have made you stick with the game or, you know, that slightly wider framing of like, okay, something was so compelling that I kept going through a broken-ass game, we have a very fun question today. I thought this was a nice one, especially for a somewhat lighter episode today. And here we go. This comes from Jesse. Jesse writes in, "My friend was at a Red Lobster the other day, and a family came in. While they were waiting on a table, their elementary-age daughter started doing the floss dance in what he could only describe as her assuming her default idol animation because she did it for a solid 10 to 15 minutes. What is everyone's default idol animation? Bonus question, can any of you floss? Regards, Jesse."
What is the floss dance?
It's a Fortnite thing, isn't it? Here, let's get a...
look it up.
I'm going to get a clip up of the Fortnite floss.
Floss dance. How to do the floss, a parent's guide. Great. Okay, I'm going to click
yep.
this.
Yep, baby gizmo. Yeah, that's the first thing that came up for me, too. We got an ad here, but...
So this is a Fortnite thing?
We're so fucking old.
Because Fortnite steals most of its dances from, like, black hip-hop artists. So yep. I don't know. So I guess if it is a Fortnite thing, but it's, like, popularized amongst the youth... because it's stealing without giving royalties to the artist that it's cribbing from.
I should mention this is not a Fortnite thing. It is definitely a thing that existed in black culture.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Haven't done this. I'm sure this things like this are in my future. So right now for me, I feel like my default idol animation with my daughter is she is a dada dance, which for her... is one of two things. One is where she will just sit down and she just wants me to dad dance. So she will just sit down in her chair with her milk, dance dada, dance. And I just have to, like a monkey, I just have to just do 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 do.
And the other one,
why she's not like asking specific moves yet. I'm sure that will come with age, experience, and exposure to the floss dance, but this floss dance video is long. It is a 5:42. This girl is committed to explaining the individual machinations of the floss dance. But the other one is she likes to get twirled around where, I'm surprised I haven't pulled her arm out of her socket yet, but she just wants to be picked up and thrown around, and then like she wants like... she wants to get spun around in a way that, like, if it went too far, it would hurt her. But then I hopefully will stop her, and then we'll set her down. And so those are my two idol animations where I seem to be doing that all the time. Lately, is just I dance, and apparently maybe I should look up these dances like the floss dance, and like I can try and teach my daughter something new, so we have some different dance animations to work off of.
Some new moves. I'm really glad we got both Lucy Lawless Corner and Dad Corner this week.
Yeah, we're making a habit out of this, I guess.
I love it. Rob, do you have a favorite idol animation or thoughts on the floss dance and the appropriation of black culture into Fortnite?
I think probably my I mean, that conversation might be a little heavier than I want to go at this particular moment.
That's fair.
I think my idle animation. Well, okay, like, so if left, like, what will I default to? My character.
Is it putting various drinks to your mouth? Because that's usually in the podcast. It's a water. It's a coffee. It's a beer. Like, it's just this three. There's a spread.
Oh,
like,
I line them up before the podcast. Yeah. Got to make sure that there's.
It's my favorite part. I always take notice whenever I see in the video, like, the hand's going up. I'm like, which one is it? Which one's it going to be this time?
Which one we got?
Yeah, and that might actually be the idle animation. Like, I go over to the window, stare out of it, like, slowly have a drink. Or my idle routine, like, if I'm an NPC in the world, like what gives me the illusion of, like, life and agency? Me going into my kitchen and doing dishes.
All right. Yeah, that gives you a lot of character. It says so much about you that you're a meticulous person. You care about cleanliness. You care about your space.
I
you
sure
take pride
do.
In your space. Look at that.
Someone's
a lot
got
there.
To.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Oh, shade.
Let's read between the lines there. Okay. Your partner listening to this podcast?
Yeah, I was going
to
ask.
I hope not.
Yeah, well, that's I know mine doesn't. I rely on that every day.
Good. Very good. Mine would be, I definitely, so when it was the 10th anniversary of Idle Thumbs the other day, and it got me reminiscing about some good Idle Thumbs memories. This was
great
specific.
Podcast. People should go back and listen to that. Even though there aren't new episodes anymore, it is an all-time. There'll be a historical ranking at some point. Idle Thumb, you know, like, One Up Yours. There'll be, other, you know, Giant Bombcast probably on there. Like, Idle Thumbs absolutely be on, like, a historical all-time best gaming podcast. So yeah. Just go back. It is funny in a way that you will still be able to appreciate listening to them out of context of when they were recorded. Anyway, yeah. That's my just. You were on
Thank
Idle Thumbs.
You.
You're not allowed
yeah.
to do it. I just wanted to make that pitch for the podcast for people that maybe if they fell off it or never listened to it.
Exactly. Yeah, listen to Patrick. But I used to run to the Idle Thumbs office, to the Campo/Idle Thumbs office. And it was only like a mile and a quarter from my home at the time. So sometimes I would do extra running around and then go back there, whatever. And I would go in, I would like stretch, I would say hi to everybody. And Jake used to remark like, oh, Danielle got bored and did her idle animation. I'd just be doing like push-ups on the floor. That would be like the thing I did. It was kind of fun and cute. And in terms of like, in all of games forever, the Donkey Kong Country idle animations were really great in all those games. There would be like cute little like they would sit down and like play a Game Boy or kind of like, you know, sort of tap their feet and, you know, Dixie Kong used to chew bubblegum, make bubbles. They were just cute and like fun and had a lot of character, a lot of playful little nuance to them. So
for me, it was Mortal Kombat because Mortal Kombat arcades were like such a huge part of growing up for me and my friends, you know, there was ubiquitous at malls back when even malls were ubiquitous, which is definitely not true anymore. But, you know, it's like I would be old enough where my parents could drop me and my brother off at the arcade and then my mom could go shop for clothes and she'd come back, you know, half an hour later or whatever. And just that was the age of fighting games, specifically Mortal Kombat, because it was violent. We'd do a lot of play animations for when we would get home and we couldn't actually play Mortal Kombat, but it was a lot of, you know, rotating your arms and standing in place. Like that was a huge staple of me and my brother and my friends was like, because that was such a huge part of those games. And there's a good follow Ed Boon on Twitter. When he's not snarking and teasing about whatever they're working, he is often sharing really cool behind the scenes, like videos and images, like specifically of, like the filming they would do for the character animations in Mortal Kombat. There was one he did recently that if you do some Google searching, I'm sure you can get a Kotaku article or something about it. But if you like me, were fascinated by those idle animations, there's some cool stuff that he's been sharing recently about the actual production of that stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I do love that stuff too. Anything I can get for in terms of like, oh, extra information about things I loved as a kid, which I know is like a thing on the internet in general, but especially Mortal Kombat. Oh, it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if you have questions or, you know, really good stories about your friends in Red Lobster, you can send those to gaming at
love that subgenre of the Red Lobster story.
It's really good. It's really good. Shout outs to Katie Weaver's My Favorite Piece Ever by her that had to do with Nicki Minaj and her history of working at Red Lobsters. It's the greatest piece of celebrity journalism I've ever read in my entire life.
I have not read that piece. You'll have to link it.
Oh, it's beautiful. I'll put a link in the show notes. It seriously gives me joy on a bad day. It's one of those for me. It's very good.
Okay.
All right. So, gamingatvice.com with a subject question. Let's do a quick shout out to the charity stream. October 18th at noon to October 21st at noon. We're going to be doing a charity live stream benefiting the Florence Immigrant and Refugee Rights Project. There's going to be a post on the site with more info, and we are going to have an interview scheduled for Monday with a rep from the Florence Project. So check that out. That's, of course, going to be on twitch.tv/waypoint. You can find
all the... We're going to get together.
What's up?
We're all going to get together.
We are. It doesn't happen very often. All of us. It's going to be exciting. In a room instead of a virtual room. It's going to be very good. So we can like give real high fives, which is what you do in a room.
I'm going to beat dead cells. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to beat dead cells.
Dead cells beaten by the true gamer.
I think you already beat dead cells.
I mean, I beat the shit out of dead cells, but I did not actually beat it. So I need to... Spider-Man came out around the time that I had reviewed Spider-Man right in the thrust of Dead Cells. So I'm going to hopefully use this stream as a chance to knock it off as we head towards Game of the Year.
There we go. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to being in the room for that. That'll be exciting. Shout-outs to Too Mellow for the track Bump This off of Trunk Fiction. Check out his music and musings on Twitter at Mellow Makes, MELLOMAKES. And his tracks at twomellowmakes.bandcamp.com. We are on Twitter at Waypoint. We're on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. YouTube at Waypoint Vice. Twitch.tv/Waypoint. And of course, you can read everything from us at waypoint.vice.com, including that piece, brief piece that I wrote about Xena in Assassin's Creed today, which was very fun to write. I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole, and it was very exciting for me. All right, Rob, where can we find you online?
At Rob Zachney.
Patrick, where can we find you online?
At Patrick Klubik, talking about how H2O is actually an underrated Halloween movie, and you should go and watch it.
It really is, actually.
It's actually, like, John Carpenter was supposed to direct it. Before Halloween comes out, now that I've almost finished a complete rewatch of the series, I'm about to watch Halloween Resurrection, and I'm going to suffer through the Rob Zombie movies. If you want to get set up, even though the new Halloween ignores everything after the first movie,
right?
It pretends none of the sequels exist. You want to watch Halloween 1, 2, and H2O, and that kind of gives you a canonical arc for like Laurie Strode in the old Halloween sort of canon. And then also watch Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. It's an all-time classic. Anyway, sorry.
You can follow me. You
saying those things at Patrick Klubik, finding out that H2O is actually like a fantastic film. Also, the idea for the film was pitched by Kevin Williamson, who would go on to do the Scream films. And actually, you can see a lot of Kevin Williamson in H2O. Sorry.
Anyway. No, it's great. We got a little waypoints in here, too. We got Dad Corner, Lucy Lawless Corner.
I didn't know where I was going to get that in elsewhere. And I was just like, I'm just going to toss it in here. So
that's perfect.
I was not going to make H2O my waypoints and make people maybe watch like the eighth film in the Halloween franchise. I'm sorry, I cannot do that.
Hey, some people like Joss Hartnett, okay? Some people.
That's right. Also, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, his like first appearance in a film is in that movie. He dies with an ice skate to his head.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Are you just that calling him now? I love it.
Yeah.
Yo, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
He was also a kid who barfed in Independence Day. That was a little bit before, but it was very brief.
That's right.
That's
right. That's before he was like an actor.
Yeah, it was very, very... That was a quick appearance. Anyway, I guess we should get out of here.
Horror corner. It's October. We should have a horror corner.
That's right.
Danielle, it's just your podcast. We can add a horror corner to your podcast if we want. We should do that. Yes. The rest of the Fridays, we're doing a horror corner.
Goddamn right. We'll have a dad corner and a horror corner.
I started playing Dead Space again yesterday.
Oh my god, you do?
Yeah, because I can't do it on PC anymore. The controls are so shitty. Like, they're so bad, but it's good on Xbox One. I think they might even, like, it looks pretty good.
Because they do, some of those games they gave Xbox One X enhancements to,
I think it might be one of those. Because it looks pretty fucking good.
Is it on Game Pass?
That's where I got
it.
Are
you saying
it
is, or is
it? That's where I got it from originally, I think. But I don't think it's on Game Pass anymore, because I think EA has their thing that they're doing. Nevertheless, I started playing it. Like Alien Isolation, Dead Space, Halloween movies,
Soma.
Horror
Soma.
Corner.
Hell yeah. God, I love it. All right. I could talk for another 2 hours about this stuff. Probably shouldn't. Probably should end this podcast.
Austin's
but...
on vacation. What's he going to do? Tell us not to do it?
Yeah, right.
Actually, he might, because he doesn't actually really take vacations. He still checks in.
Yeah, he's like
probably
listening right now.
He's probably listening right now. Wrap it up. Just kidding. Austin doesn't do that. I mean, he's probably listening, but he won't yell at us to wrap it up.
So. Austin's the last person to tell anyone to wrap it up. Austin just keep talking for another hour.
Yeah, exactly. He's got stuff to say. You know, he's got a lot of things. This is a beautiful podcast. I'm very glad we did this today, my friends. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at DanielleRI, where I will be tweeting about Xena all day, probably, because now I'm on a Xena trip. Xena Remembrance Day. It's coming out day. It's National Coming Out Day. You might as well watch Xena.
You know what? There might have been a lot of people that came out, too, over the course of Xena Warrior Princess, so maybe there's some overlap.
Exactly. Everyone, have a wonderful weekend. Be safe. Do all the good things. And I will remind you, as always, to be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Da 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 Xena.
Is that the intro to Xena, Warrior Princess?
How I think of it.
Da 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 Xena.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.